Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the Red Pill Expo, and really excited about our very first guest. We're not going to do any of the news stuff today. We're not going to do any of that. But first, I want to introduce John Jacob Schmidt with Radio Free Redoubt. He will be kind of off camera a little bit because it's John Jacob Schmidt.
Yes. It's a pleasure to be with you again, Matt.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, it's old times again. This is Patriot Radio from a couple years ago. Well, our first guest today, really, really excited about, is Lord Christopher Monckton, who is really an expert throughout the entire world on the issue of global warming or climate change. First of all, what do you think about Red Pill Expo so far? What can people expect?
What people can expect is an extraordinary event. We had one in Montana last year. And about 600 people came, and they had a really, really good time. And the Marxist news media went ballistic with anger. And that means they know very well what to expect here. We are people who are in favor of liberty. We think for ourselves. We speak for ourselves. We exercise the right of free speech guaranteed to us in the Constitution. There are no no-go areas. There is no political correctness. We say that which is true, whether anybody likes it or not. But we say it politely, we say it cheerfully, and we have a darn good time saying it.
The local newspaper here in Spokane tried to label this entire event as alt-right and full of conspiracy theories. And how do you respond to those kind of criticisms? Because it seems like we hear them quite a lot lately. They don't really come back at us with facts and logic and reason. It's all this emotional rhetoric and label lynching.
Well, I think this is very typical of the unthinking Marxist left. And let's not call them neo-Marxists. They're just plain Marxist, good old-fashioned Marxist left. And it's rather endearing in a way that this relic of failed thinking still prevails on the left, but it is fading, and what you're seeing is the death throes of left-wing extremism. And in the Spokane paper this morning, they say that I am a dangerous lunatic in that what I have been doing is going around the country trying to persuade states to secede from the Union. Now, there is not very much truth in that.
No.
What actually happened was that last year when I was in Montana, I was approached by a group in Northern California that was worried about the fact that the left were trying to destroy the dams on the river that supply all the farmsteads with water out there. And it would have made a desert out of the northern end of California, as they've already done in the middle of California.
Sure.
And they said to me, can we declare ourselves independent? And I very sternly said, yes, you can, but you must have a referendum of the population first, and only if the people wish it should you even think of doing any such thing. And they were very disappointed, and they went away. And that, I'm afraid, was the extent of that particular conspiracy.
You know, we have these... it's always facts, right? So we have these people here in the United States of America who try to say global warming, climate change... But see, they shift between terms without really defining them. They'll say global warming is a settled fact. But that's really not the case.
Well, it is a settled fact that if you add, or rather return to the atmosphere, some of the very large amount of carbon dioxide that used to be there, they can't remember, but I mean, you're probably too young, but if you go back 750 million years to the Neo-Proterozoic era, there was at that time something like 7,500 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. Today, it's 400. So, yes, if you add CO2 to the atmosphere, you will get some warming. But if the planet didn't fry at 7,500 parts per million, it's not going to fry at 400. They've exaggerated the effects of what will be a very small and modest warming. And what I will be saying here at the expo is that my team, which has been working very diligently on how much warming we're going to get for the last 6 or 7 years, has just about we're just about to submit a scientific paper to a leading climate journal, one which they will respect, which provide a simple proof by nothing more than high school algebra that their only reason for thinking there will be a dangerous lot of global warming rather than just a little is that they forgot to allow for the fact that the sun is shining.
And it seems honestly, at least I think so, it seems so very simple that if the sun is shining and that great big ball in the sky is really driving a lot of our climate, because Greenland used to be called Greenland for a reason.
Yes, it was actually largely a marketing reason by Eric Red, because only southwestern Greenland was prone to be green at that time. It's actually much more under ice now than it was then. Interestingly, that was the medieval warm period when Greenland was a little bit less icy than it is now. It was still mostly covered with ice even then.
So for elected officials like myself here in America at the state level, what would be your message to us in America in regards to this whole issue of climate change and spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on things that we probably don't need to be spending on?
Every single red spent cent that has been spent or is being spent or will be spent on making global warming go away is, as a result of our definitive mathematical proof, unnecessary. You've no need to worry about global warming at all ever again. The scare is over, and we can prove it, and we have proved it.
We have proved it.
Yes.
Exactly. I want to kind of take you back a little bit. What did Margaret Thatcher think about all of this? You were a special advisor to her for a little while.
And you're very well researched. Yes, I was. And indeed, I tended to give her advice on scientific matters on the premise that in the world of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And I had an interest in science, though no piece of paper to say I was a scientist. And so I tended to give her scientific advice. And I did draw her attention to the fact that the scientists who are beginning to make a fuss about global warming, it wasn't very much in those days. This was in the early 80s and mid-80s. But they were just beginning to get worked up about it. And my view was we should keep an eye on it, but not do anything much because it might be oversold. But then I became more enthusiastic in support of the idea that global warming was going to be a real problem. After I left London, I wrote a series of articles broadcast on chat shows in Britain saying this is going to be terrible, we're going to have to look out. And then, quite by chance in 2006, I was approached by the manager of a boutique hedge fund in the city. He said, we need to really know about this. Could you spend a month and have a look and tell us what the problem is and how big the problem is? The moment I began actually researching it, I found that it was largely nonsense.
Well, I think that you've done a phenomenal job bringing this nationally, internationally for us, bringing the facts out. And it's not conspiracy theory we're talking about. We're talking about well-documented facts. And I think logic and reason needs to return to the debate, and I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, that's very kind, and that is really important, because the left, like all totalitarians, and remember that Hitler was left as well. They're always saying that we are all Hitlers. No, Hitler was left wing of the National Socialist Workers' Party in Germany. He was a National Socialist just as the Marxists today.
Yes.
But the left are left wing. They are totalitarians, and totalitarians don't like letting people think. To them, the party line is all. To us, the only thing that matters is the truth. The only question that was ever asked that ever mattered was asked by the governor of an unconsidered province of Judea 2,000 years ago. He said, quid est veritas? What is the truth? But he didn't care about the answer. He didn't stay for it. And the one who could have told him whatever he wanted to know was standing right in front of him. It is we who are interested in the truth, and they, the successful conscious right, who know there is such a thing as the truth, but they don't really care what it is or where it is.
And Lord Monckton, our family motto is Vincit Veritas, truth conquers. And I think that's what our message is throughout this whole expo.
That's absolutely right. Veritas vos liberabit, the truth that sets you free,
yes,
as it says. And, of course, it's very interesting. All three persons of the Trinity are separately described in different books of the Bible as being the God of truth. God the Father is the God of truth, God the Son is the way, the truth, and life, and the Spirit of truth which shall be sent among you. So the truth is where we are, and it's only when you go for a party line rather than the truth that you end up with totalitarianism. populism, and that way lies disaster. And more Americans are realizing. If you saw Donald Trump's wonderful rally in Minnesota yesterday, he really knows how to wind up a crowd.
Yes.
I've never seen a stadium so full. They were having a lovely time. There were a couple of protesters who were booed out. Everybody else had a marvelous time. And I think there is an awakening now in the United States of the need to get back to the founding fathers' vision that this should be a country.
Yes.
Devoted itself to the truth. You advance yourselves by sticking to the truth and not by sticking to some boring and, as we can now prove, 180 degrees inaccurate party line.
Well, Lord Christopher Monckton, thank you very much for joining us on Patriot Radio. Keep up the fight. Appreciate everything you're doing, and just love to hear your remarks coming up here at the Red
really
Pill Expo.
Kind. I've got to go off and plot a revolution in another state.
All right. Be blessed. All right, so I think this is important to understand that when we're talking about all of these things, thank you again. We're talking about all of these things that we're talking facts, well-documented facts.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I want to make sure that as we go forward, we continue to hit that. These are well-documented facts that we're talking about,
yeah.
Well-documented, not conspiracy theory. And that's something that is used by those that are ignorant to try to
right.
label
real, lynchers. Real science that they want to reject. So, yeah, he's got some amazing – I look forward to going actually looking at his booth and getting more information from him, what he's involved in. So, yeah, this is very exciting. Now, also, I think on our last guest, some of the feedback that we're getting, I guess, from the station is
yeah.
we need to have our guests get a little bit closer up on the mic. So we'll pay attention to that. Sorry for that, folks.
So we are trying to do this, you know, live. So there's going to be a little bit of technical thing, but,
yeah.
you know, it's great.
Bitter
this is why
us.
We're doing it. So our next guest is a man that we all know very well, and everybody in Patriot Radio Land knows very, very well. And that is the guy that has made Agenda 21 a household word. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's an actual 300-page, 30-chapter document. And who also is probably one of the foremost defenders of property rights in the United States of America, Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center. Thanks for joining us on Patriot Radio.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks.
So what do you think about the Red Pill Expo, and what is your message to everybody out there about why they should be paying attention to this and still staying involved instead of falling victim to the Trump slump?
Yeah, man, that's very much a serious thing to think about. I've experienced that before when Ronald Reagan was president. A lot of people rose up and got him elected, think, oh, okay, fine. Now he's going to solve all of our problems. And you know, we went into that slump, and now's the time to really kick them.
Yes.
Know, they're,
kick them while they're down.
Exactly. You know, if we have this opportunity. If we're ever going to win, we have to fight.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I think one of the big things about the Red Pill Expo is this is an opportunity for people to really begin to see why we're fighting, why we've done it. Some of us have done this for so long. Why are we doing it? One of the things with Donald Trump's election was that he brought out people who had not been involved before. They
yes.
got excited. They got energized. Our duty is to keep those people involved and make sure that we bring them in and you know, in their own communities and so forth, that they get involved.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Well, what I've seen is kind of twofold. I've seen people that are energized by this. They are getting involved who had not previously. And then we also see a lot of patriots that are patriotic citizens that just kick back. They take their foot off the gas pedal. How do they fight? So we want to tell them, get in the fight. Now's the time to put the pedal all the way down to the floor. What are practical steps that they can take right now to really get engaged, to take advantage of the ground that we've gained by having Trump in there?
See, one of the, just go back a little bit, one of the problems that we have is that the people that we're working with, the people we want to get out there to fight, are people who have families, people who have jobs.
Sure.
And they're trying to live their lives. And the other side, you know, the vast majority of these activists that we see out there are paid.
Yes.
Or are brought in one way or another who haven't anything else to do. This is what they do. And so that makes it very difficult for us to do. One of the things that I advocate is, first of all, we can get scattered by so many things going on. and you start down one path and this other thing pops up, and people, it just frustrates people to the point that they back off and they don't know which way to go.
Right.
And do I, you know, a lot of people get really involved in presidential campaigns. That's where people really get involved. But what we really need is to put that energy on the local level. To go to your city council meetings, go to your county commission meetings. This is where the real stuff is being put into place that affects you every day. And when they have these public meetings, and we hear this all the time, the planners and all these agencies have these public meetings. The only people who show up are these professional planners and these NGO organizations, non-governmental organizations that
right.
are pushing these policies. And good, honest elected officials that are sitting there listening to all this says, well, I never heard your point of view. You weren't there.
Right.
And so I thought this is the way to go. And this is what's happening. So to get involved on that local level is absolutely vital. And the other thing is that, pick your issue. What's the one that really affects you or you're really concerned about? And fight that. And
yeah.
fight it tooth and nail. Mine happens to be property rights. And property is your home. Property is where you bring your family up. And this is absolutely under assault everywhere we turn. And with all these planning programs. And so this is where I focus all of my attention. I could go into, I've been interested in the education issue. I've been interested in the personal privacy issue. I've written about these things.
Sure.
But property rights is the one that I really have focused on, and I just stick right there to it.
Private property rights is something that, here in the Western United States has been a battle for literally over a century. And one of the big issues is water. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing around the country, not just to control water, but to control other aspects of private property rights.
Well, the water, if you control the water, you control everything.
Yes.
If you got no water to drink, you got no water to water your crops, you've got, water's everything. And they have moved in through the EPA primarily, but other agencies, to completely control water. You have people who have beachfront property. Suddenly they're finding out they can't have a little dock there for their boat, or dams are being taken down.
Yes.
And these dams were built as a means to control the water supply. And what we're starting to find is they're taking these dams down. They're saying that's not natural. And so what you're finding are people being starved of water. They don't have
right.
enough. California has a massive shortage of water because they have destroyed all the process that was put up to have water.
Yes.
I find it really interesting. The Emerald Valley, which is beautiful and green, and the environmentalists lusted over this land. And they finally get in there, and they take that land, and they destroyed all the things that the farmers put together to make it emerald green, and they found out, golly gee, it's a desert.
Yes. Isn't that something?
This is what we end up doing. And so these kind of things, and property rights in the cities, the inner city, you have people there in low-income neighborhoods or ethnic neighborhoods who have property. They own some, a lot of them own property. They own their home or whatever. They have little businesses, little mom-and-pop restaurants and bakeries and things like
yep.
that. Now you've got people sitting behind the scenes in closed doors in city council or wherever it would be, and they're sitting there plotting out what we're going to do with that over there. We're going to redevelop that area over there.
Right.
And they use eminent domain, and they come in and they bulldoze those private businesses, bulldoze that private property. Those people who live there to begin with now are out of their homes. And
right.
they can't afford to live in the high-rise condos, and the corporations come in, and now they're the restaurants, they're the bakeries. So what happens to those people? They are forced onto public housing and public welfare programs, and once you get on those programs, there is no way out.
Yeah.
Now somebody else is telling you, here's how much money you can have, and go live on this, and aren't we wonderful for giving you that?
Mm. So this is no longer conspiracy theory. No, the local newspaper, if you can call it that, more of a birdcage liner, put out an article essentially saying this expo was filled with conspiracy theorists. I didn't know Robert Kiyosaki, one of the best-selling financial authors, was a conspiracy theorist or that free market capitalism is a conspiracy theory. What we're talking about, these are all very well documented, and you have put together quite a list.
We have, I don't know, it's just amazing that they, all I ever do is use their words. I'm not creative enough to make this stuff up.
Right.
I use their words. I mean, we just had Mayor de Blasio of New York City in a New Yorker magazine interview say the problem he has in putting all of this kind of these programs together is that our legal system is set up to protect property rights. And he believes that all the people of every level, of economic level in his city, in New York, would rather the government decide where the buildings go, how high the buildings will be, what the rents will be, and who will be allowed to live there. He said that. I didn't.
Wow.
He did. And this is the kind of thing we're up against. They have said over and over again that property rights is racism because some people can make money from private property, but others can't. So let's take it away from everybody so that we're
right.
all equal. We're all equally poor under that.
Right.
There's no incentive to get ahead. Now they're moving into neighborhoods that is in Baltimore, Maryland. The NAACP filed a lawsuit saying that Section 8 housing causes ghettos. Well, duh, we could have told you that.
Yeah.
You put all this together in one place. So what they win the lawsuit, and the result of the lawsuit is that they now need to move that Section 8 housing into higher-income neighborhoods to make it all fair, you
right.
understand. Now these people who have worked for a living, who have built up a nest egg for themselves, trying to get ahead, are going to see their property values plummet. That's the result of it.
It reminds me of We the Living during the Bolshevik Revolution, where they were doing the same thing. There's people who had come home from work, and those who had jobs, and there'd be another family in their apartment. And when they protested, they said, "Well, you're willing to help out your fellow countrymen, aren't you, comrade? I mean, you don't have any issues, because if you get an issue, you're going to disappear."
That's right.
So, I mean, how far are we from that with the way this is going? It's just
amazing. Having studied communist revolutions for decades, I see what we're facing here is the classic revolution that they have always instigated.
Yes.
Divide and conquer the people, get them fighting against each other, and taking the private property and controlling, now this whole thing with these universal incomes and that kind of thing where
right.
everybody will make the same thing. And eventually, the productive person, the energetic person says, "What am I doing this for? I'm not going to get ahead doing this. I'm not going to do anything." Why do we have in every communist country, whether it was the Soviet Union, it's Cuba, or Venezuela today, why suddenly do are all the shelves empty? There's no products left to buy.
Right.
Because people quit.
Yeah.
There's nobody to supply them. Everybody's going to get their money anyway.
But there is always somebody in communism that does get ahead, and that's if you're involved in the government.
That's exactly right. Well, Tom DeWeese, American Policy Center, thank you so much for everything you're doing, and really appreciate the fact that you have now made this fact. No longer in the realm of conspiracy, we just need to fight it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me just say one quick thing. We put together a booklet called Why Property Rights Matter. And it just kind of goes into the details of what it means. If you will, if you go to a website, whypropertyrightsmatter.com, you can download it for free. So,
outstanding. Whypropertyrightsmatter.com.
That's it.
That's
Got
awesome.
It.
Thanks again.
Thank
All right.
So much.
Be blessed.
Bless.
So many people here at the Red Pill Expo that are just, they have put their life's work into proving these things.
Yeah, and these are these subject matter experts. I'm finding that a lot of times they're not scientists, they're not doctors. They are people that have a natural talent for researching.
Yeah,
and they're tracking down professionals, and they're interviewing them. They're doing the research, and the research that they're showing that they're bringing forward to us, it becomes their life work.
That's exactly right. And, you know, doing live radio broadcasts like this and getting these folks on in front of the people
yeah.
on social media like we're doing now, we're broadcasting live on Facebook as well
yeah,
as
absolutely.
ACN. So our next guest is somebody that has done quite a bit to expose technocracy. He's the author of Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, one of the linchpins of the Red Pill Expo, somebody that's also behind Red Pill University, my good friend, and I know a lot of people's favorite out there, Pat Wood.
I've been here before. <It's> good to be here. I'm so glad you guys are here with all your stuff and able to do this. It's amazing. Technology is amazing today.
So it is. And let's talk a little bit about the label lynching that occurred with the local rag birdcage liner newspaper here. You know, we're talking about people that have put their lives into proving things and documenting facts.
There's a Marxist, what I want to say, technique that that never addresses the facts. This was part of Bill Ayer's cookbook, 1A, you know, or 101A or whatever.
Yeah.
And that is never attack somebody based on facts, but rather attack them to simply discredit them, to throw up a smokescreen, get everybody confused as to, well, they're really a bunch of schnooks, you know that, so you can't trust them. And that's what this article did. It accused everybody of everything. It didn't have anything factual in it, really.
Right.
And they brought the SPLC into it, of course, and got all kinds of quotes from one of the, you know, assistant directors. Absolute nonsense.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting that they would use the SPLC as a source for this tripe when they just had to settle a multi-million dollar lawsuit.
And they're in for some more.
And there is a pile of them coming. I know that they have attacked many of us.
Mm-hmm. They have, and they're going to get sued. Unfortunately,
yes, they
have a source of funds that will probably replenish them. But they're still in the game.
They still are in the game,
yeah.
And it's our job to fight them. Let's talk a little bit about technocracy, if we could. What is that? Why should listeners be paying attention? And what's your message to them here at Red Pill?
Well, you know, the biggest thing currently right now about with technocracies, in Europe in particular, in Italy, they just installed a new government, elected a new government, based on the populist movement over there, which is very similar in nature to our populist movement here. But the populists found a very odd bedfellow with technocrats in Italy. And so it's given rise to a new movement, political slash whatever, governance movement, called technopopulism. You're going to see this all over the place. It is kind of humorous at first, but technopopulism is even being written about now in, with, you know, longer essays and stuff by, you know, people, think tanks like the Brookings Institution, for instance. You know, that's that 90-year-old outfit that's
right.
been pushing
think
globalization
tank.
Forever.
Yep.
And, you know, if scholars at Brookings are writing about technopopulism, I guarantee you it has legs.
Yeah.
And it's going to go somewhere.
And funding.
And we see here in America, I see here in America, the same thing is happening with the populist movement here that is blending in with the technocratic movement.
Yes.
And so Trump, being a populist candidate, has also installed many technocrat people in his cabinet and other government positions.
Yeah.
It's been very curious to me why, but now I'm starting to understand, watching Europe and what's happening there, especially in Italy, and watching some people, organizations like the Brookings Institution, writing about it openly, it explains a lot of what's going on right now in our country, because the populism movement is real, but if it's already been co-opted by the technocratic people movement, we're in for a heap of trouble. And that means the technocracy in our country is not going to stop. It's going to continue regardless of whatever, you know, populism movement's going on in Washington.
Now this is a new term for a lot of people. So for the listeners out there, describe what is a technocrat. When we use that term, what does that mean?
Well, there's two senses to it. One, a technocrat is somebody who's an expert in something, who can, you know, has technical expertise to run a particular department in government.
Sure.
But that's one thing, that you get that out of the dictionary. But technocracy was a historic movement from the 1930s that was bent on scientists and engineers and technologists taking over the entire operation of the country. They defined a new economic system, and they called it technocracy, to replace capitalism and free enterprise. They wanted to dump the whole thing. In fact, they even called for Roosevelt to declare himself dictator, dismiss Congress, and simply impose technocracy back in the 1930s. We can be glad that Roosevelt didn't take him up on it, but they made the call. A very radical, a radical philosophy and a radical group, but they intend to change the economic system that literally has made America great, you know, capitalism for enterprise.
Right.
United Nations has followed suit with that. They have sworn at this point to overthrow capitalism for enterprise and replace it with what they call sustainable development. I document in my book very, very clearly that sustainable development is really just another term for technocracy.
Right.
It's a resource-based economic system based on energy and carbon, if you will, and that's exactly out of the playbook from the 1930s. It's not communism. It's not fascism. It is collectivist on one hand, but it's neither of those things. In fact, they hated communists back in that day. If you call a technocratic commie, you probably get in a fist fight.
So let's talk a little bit about Red Pill University. You're spearheading it. What is it, so listeners understand?
Well, the idea of RPU is to, you know, get faculty, like some of the speakers we have here at this Red Pill Expo, to get faculty involved in producing original content that addresses some of the fake news and fake history that we're inundated with. Everybody's talking about fake news, but fake history is really a bigger problem because history is being rewritten every day. I mean, it's just like 1984, you know, the Ministry of Truth.
Sure, yes.
They figure out what they want history to say, and then they just go edit it.
Right.
Well, that's all. We can't do that. Anyway, that's what Red Pill University is kind of all about right now. And we're still kind of getting started. It's not easy to start a, you know, big thing like this. And G. Edward Griffin, it was his idea originally, is still involved in it. It's a big undertaking. That's all I can say. It's a meaty undertaking.
Well, really appreciate what you guys have gone through to put this together. I've seen a little bit of the inner workings. And Pat, you're changing not just America. You're changing the world by bringing truth and bringing freedom and liberty all over, and with a voice, again, that is logical and based on reason.
Yeah.
We try real hard to do that. You know, we get all kinds of charges to the contrary from groups like the SPLC. But you know what? That only means we're on the radar.
Yes.
It means they're scared of us. If they weren't scared of us, they wouldn't be slandering us all over the place.
That's right.
So I say amen. Bring it on.
Yeah, if you're a threat, it's a badge of honor. Wear it proudly.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Take care, Pat. Be blessed.
All right,
thanks again.
God bless.
So, JJ, what are your thoughts about how all of this is kind of shaken down with, you know, all the facts that have happened with technocracy and all of these things that have been very, very well documented, and yet it's still being poo-pooed. It's still being ignored when it really shouldn't be.
Well, it's no different than anything else that we're facing today. It's being poo-pooed by those that are perpetuating a Marxist-based ideology and globalism. And we're facing the same thing with, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's the environmental issues, whether it's the preservation of families and marriage, or the unborn, Second Amendment rights, whatever it is, it's the tactics of the left are the same. And you just have to be eternally vigilant.
You do have to be eternally vigilant, and that's what this whole expo is about, right? It's getting people educated so that they can be eternally vigilant. Well, our next guest has been on Patriot Radio before and has been very busy as of late, I suspect. And I really appreciate retired Major General Paul Vallely. He's the founder and CEO of Stand Up U.S. America, and really appreciate everything you're doing as well. Can you give us a little bit of what's happening behind the scenes, especially in regards to Russia and Putin?
Oh, yes. Good question. Well, thank you, Matt. Always great to be on your show and discuss the events that are occurring across the country and outside of the United States. I can tell you, I'm not sure I told you this, but I set up the first meeting.
You did.
Between Putin and Trump. And it was just announced yesterday that they're moving forward now with the second meeting, which I recommended. a new North Korea would be the highlight, for the past 30 days, a new the president and Secretary Pompeo would move forward now with the next meeting between Putin and Trump. And if they do meet, they can solve a lot of problems, because after that first meeting, I hoped we would come together quicker. But then the Russian collusion started, the Democratic onslaught against the president and the media. And so as we started blaming Russia for everything, Putin sort of backed off and said, well, I better wait until things settle down a little bit before we meet again. So they're looking at it in a realistic manner. But two superpowers meeting just like China can solve a lot of problems.
Well, both John Jacob and I served in the Army, so we appreciate your service. And
yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about this Russian collusion?
Russian collusion. Well, it's only on the Democratic side, it seems, with Clinton and her cronies. Certainly Trump wasn't involved with it at all. Don Jr.'s met with some Russians, as many have. Throughout Congress have met with Russians. I've been to the Russian embassy in Washington several times, and I guess they could accuse me of colluding also. But colluding is not really a crime, you know. We can all collude as much as we want.
That's right.
But it's not a crime. It's those events that could lead to changing a government or influencing a government. That's where it gets a little sticky, and Trump was not involved in that. So,
well, you know, one of the great things that you've done is actually facilitate dialogue. You've actually got people talking. I mean, shouldn't we be doing that?
Well, sure, absolutely. Look what's happened with North Korea. Look what's happened with China. Look what happened after the first meeting with Putin. It started to get off on a good track and then got derailed. Absolutely. And we have the master of the deal. And that's what diplomacy is. You go out there, you have an agenda, and maybe not too detailed. But the important thing is to meet eye to eye, and that's what he did with Kim Il-sung in Singapore. So having been involved in a lot of those situations myself, it can be very effective. But you can't sit in Washington, D.C. You can't sit in the swamp
right. And
hope you're going to solve things just over the telephone or reacting to the international press or the domestic press that we have in the United States. And that's what the president's about. He gets out and does things. And in Minneapolis, Minnesota last night.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be meeting with Putin somewhere here probably in the next 30 days. We're not sure yet. But that's what a real leader does. He meets face-to-face, eye-to-eye, and you discuss the issues, and then you can see what you can work out. And here's what you want to really achieve is a win-win situation. I was in San Antonio last month, and I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name. He's the president of Whole Foods, John Mackey.
Oh, yeah.
Just bought out by Amazon for $1.4 billion. And
wow.
He described how he created an organization not to beat you, win-lose. I win, you lose. His whole attitude was, we're going to create a win-win situation, even if we're competitors, so that we both come out ahead.
Right.
And what a great idea. But that's what Trump is. That's the way I deal. I want a win-win situation while I win, even with an adversary.
Absolutely. So, I know things got amped up a little bit there with Syria, and almost a proxy war between the United States and Russia tangled up in there. Where do you see this? Where do you see us? What's your assessment of the Syrian situation right now as it relates to or affecting Russia and United States relations? Where do you see that going?
Well, funny you should ask me that question. Matt probably knows. I'm the only senior one that's been inside Syria in the last 4 years.
Ah.
I went in with 400 men in the most dangerous city in the world, Aleppo. You can see it on YouTube.
Oh. Wow.
And then ISIS put a hit out on me to kidnap and behead me. And you see that on YouTube as well. But so I'm very familiar with the situation.
Yeah.
I've been working the Syrian problem for the last 6 years since the revolution started over there in late 2011.
Mm.
And through my Middle East coordinator, Colonel Najee Najjar, who travels with me all the time. But I tried to get support for the resistance movement over there. We attempted to do it, but the Obama administration would do nothing.
Right.
So you had a lot of freedom fighters over there, but we didn't help them at all. We're going to do something different now with Iran. I just spoke to an event in Washington last Saturday for regime change in Iran, but have the Iranians create the change for a free and new Iran.
Yes.
Because we think the Iranian, the mullahs, the theocracy there is going to probably fall very shortly. Things are not good over there. So it's ripe for countries. I know Saudi Arabia wants to help the Iranian resistance. The United States, Pompeo, and Trump said that they're backing that kind of a thing. Israel now has a liaison, a coordination, a coalition, so to speak, between Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. And that's all different now. The whole world scene has changed.
Yes.
But you know why it's changing? Trump is making a change.
Yes,
right.
He is.
That's right.
He's changed not only the United States, what's happening here, but what's happening across all the oceans.
Well, I've often argued that he is our modern-day Winston Churchill.
No doubt about it.
Unquestionably.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing man.
It's a great comparison.
Probably the best president we will ever have again. So,
certainly from a unique standpoint of speaking his mind, going to the people directly, not playing politics. And that's what we've been thirsting for decades, to have somebody like that since Reagan. But he's surpassing Reagan in all of that because of his business background.
I agree.
You know, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are taking America seriously again. It's amazing.
Everybody
the respect
is.
Has returned.
Yeah.
They had no respect.
None. When I was in the Middle East, we lost all respect from everybody over there.
Yes.
Yep. Major General Paul Vallely, retired, thank you very much for joining us on Patriot Radio. And again, Stand Up America, great organization. People should check it out. And look forward to hearing what you have to say here at Red Pill.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sir. God bless.
All right.
Pleasure to meet you finally.
Right. Yeah. So we keep trying to go Facebook Live, but Facebook apparently doesn't want to have Red Pill on here or something because it keeps cutting out. We got to go back live again.
The little algorithm bots are hard at work, are they?
Indeed they are. I don't know. I mean, what? Don't mess with my algorithm bot.
Yeah, man.
Don't touch my algorithm bot.
That's my algorithm bot. Keep your bots to yourself.
Yeah, keep your bots to yourself. Are you kidding me? We're going to try it again here. For everybody that's out there, we're going to go live again, and we'll just keep doing it as Facebook
crashes
and whatever. So we've got a couple other folks that we have coming on right now, and I'm really looking forward to this next guest because this really disproves, I believe, what the Socialist Review tried to paint this expo as. You know, we see it happen time and time again, but we have a great friend of Patriot Radio and a great friend from up here in the Northwest.
Yes.
Reverend Matthew Cummings. He grew up in Chicago. He not just grew up in Chicago, but he was recruited to be a communist.
Yes.
And
directly.
He's here directly. And he's here at Red Pill Expo. Reverend Cummings, it's great to have you on again.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to see you again, brother.
Yes, indeed.
So let's talk a little bit about the Socialist Review's article this morning that this is an alt-right convention of a bunch of, well, at least the implication was alt-right and everyone here must be some form of racist.
Well, we know that that's not true, and as usual, the left exaggerates for one purpose, and that's to discredit and to destroy people's characters and things of that nature.
Oh, yeah.
That's a textbook manifesto, Communist Manifesto.
Textbook. So tell the listeners a little bit about how you fought back against communism, how you ended up here at the Red Pill, and what your message is to everybody out there.
Well, sure. I have been... starting in 2008, I've been really felt led to get involved in the political scene, specifically preaching against Barack Obama, who was, to me, a true communist.
We'll have to edit that out.
And things of that
nature. He said it.
Communist?
No, he said the previous president, which will not be named.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll have to go back and edit
that. Well, no, this is a PC-free zone. Come on.
So, you know, I was able, with the sphere of influence I had with a number of different churches, to preach against what I consider an anti-Christ spirit, totally anti-constitutional republic, totally anti-American, totally against our free economy way of thinking. And unfortunately, just how everything was going, I felt it necessary to not just preach, but then try to begin to educate the church, because I found the church very non-understanding when a communist is speaking before you, unfortunately.
Yeah. And ignorant of it, first of all, they don't identify it as communists standing in front of them.
Sure.
And when you inform them, then they slip into apathy. They
right.
don't care if That's he's right. a communist.
That's right.
So what do you do with that?
Well, you know, basically what I did, and that's why I got kicked out of minister associations, I offended them.
Yes.
Basically tell them, repent. If you voted for Barack Obama in 2008 or 2012, repent, because you literally voted against God and for a man who really is against everything that this great nation stands for.
Yeah.
Well, and so, of course, that put me at odds with a lot of ministers and pastors, and basically my ministry was not considered valuable to ask to come back anymore, but that's okay.
But
I can sleep at night.
But to some of them. I mean, because that has turned into invitations in other churches.
That's right.
It opened other doors. The
yes,
Lord has opened up doors for you to take a message that's so important, to take it to those who will listen.
Right.
And it has been such an encouragement. Just unbelievable. To hear your testimony about how you were raised, when I interviewed you last year at the God and Country Celebration,
yes.
it was a year ago that
yes,
I
indeed.
First met you.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear that story about how you were recruited as a young child to be taught under the direct direction of Bill Ayers,
mm-hmm.
and how you saw what that was. How did you break free from that? It was your mother that was involved in that, correct?
Well, in fact, Bill Ayers' lover at the time was Diane Auten. And
yes.
Diane Auten was she had a legitimate gift. She was totally deceived, totally left to center. And she's the one actually who recruited me. In fact, I was what would be considered, I was the first non-white student in Children's Community School in 1969. And so then from there, Bill Ayers, which was indeed the principal, every bit of teaching had nothing to do with math or reading or history. It had everything to do with the socialist agenda.
Doctrine.
And the manifesto.
Perestroika.
That's it. And open school you hear from certain people it takes a community.
Yeah.
All of the above, all those sayings were said back then. The individual was out. The group was the most important thing. And consensus, was stressed. And that in itself, when I think about what happened back then. Probably the icing on the cake, basically, was that Diane Auten, who my mom knew, and she called her as a friend, Diane Auten started with, "You no longer have to listen to your parents." For my mom, that was enough.
Yep. Cross the line there.
And so, of course, you hear there now with parental rights, and now the state's trying to remove mm-hmm. kids from their, from their parents. And so I went home and told my mom that, and that got my mom fired up. Now, I should have gotten a spanking then, because I've told everyone, there was a belt on the door, and but my mom got wise and basically said, "What else did Diane say to you?" And so she wrote down all everything that was being taught, got other parents involved, and they finally confronted Children's Community School.
Good for
Bill Ayers, Diane Auten, and the rest. And a number of students left, and some stayed.
Have any of the students who stayed risen to any type of influential positions in our government, our country, or that you're aware of?
Not that I know of. What is very scary is a number of those who were there there's been no word at all. Mm. All of Bill Ayer's time as SDS, Weatherman Underground, all the bombings, all the evil that he did, nothing was said then. And as Barack Obama came into power, nothing's been said since then. It's been actually quite eerie.
Right.
Because for myself, actually coming out, that actually put me and my mom in trouble.
Wow.
You know, because most of the students that were there, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, God bless you for your courage.
So, you know, as kind of a final word to pastors, just really appreciate you're here at Red Pill. Look forward to hearing you speak.
Sure.
What would be your message to pastors who are listening to Patriot Radio right now?
Repent.
Amen.
Amen.
Because if you are afraid to offend and speak the truth and get involved, not just in soul winning, I'm the first. I want to see people come to Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Mm-hmm. But even more, if you're not willing to take that extra step to influence the culture, repent, because Jesus influenced every aspect of the culture where he was in.
Yeah.
Amen.
So that's my word.
He did. Great. Reverend Matthew Cummings, thank you very much for joining us on Patriot Radio today. God bless you.
Thank you.
All right.
So, well, that's encouraging stuff.
It is. So that really
is affirming.
It is affirming. I mean, that's really what we're talking about, is have a plan to impact the culture.
Yes.
Have a plan. Don't just talk about it. Actually make it happen.
Yeah. It's just, well, repent. I mean, that just summarizes it. One word. Stop doing it. You know what I'm saying? It's just...
Stop doing it.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's just great. Well, we have a long-lost friend.
We do. Long-lost. A long-lost friend.
Gallivanting around the country.
Dude, you just talked to me yesterday.
It's been virtual.
I just saw Matt yesterday.
Virtual.
But I physically saw Matt. Yeah. I had dinner with Matt yesterday.
Yes, what? We did. We actually had ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
They had really good soft serve ice cream yesterday. It was awesome.
Hey, well, you know why I wasn't there? I have an excuse.
Excuses.
We've been following the South Africa situation, the turmoil. So I got invited to a dinner last night with a missionary that's here for a couple of weeks from South Africa, explaining to me firsthand what they're facing over there. It's unreal. Unreal.
We have some really good friends from there. We should probably get in touch with them and get that kind of perspective.
Yeah. It is. It's like a bellwether for where our country's headed. If we continue with these communist, Marxist...
Hi, I'm Chris Ann Hall.
Let's introduce our long-lost friend.
Jumped right into it.
Chris Ann Hall, Liberty First, and a constitutional attorney, constitutional expert. I will say it. The media
Thank
will not.
You. No. The SPLC says I'm an anti-government extremist hater.
Wait, did you see the...
4 years in a row.
Did you see the article this morning in the Socialist Review here?
You know, I haven't. I've been wanting to pull it up, but I haven't pulled it up yet.
The SPLC's blew all their credibility.
You know what they did? So 4 years in a row, I've been the only individual listed in this group. So,
right.
So 996 groups, I'm the only individual on the list. This year, they did something special. They invented a group so they could have me on the list twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we've all been hit by them. It's kind of fun. There wasn't
I must
fun
be like a
time.
Double hater or something. You got to invent a group just so you can have me on the list twice.
The radical thing you talk about is the history behind the Constitution,
Absolutely.
Too. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Is that the first time you saw that class yesterday, Matt?
No, actually, I've seen it before three times, I think, now.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. But that was a long time ago when you were, in between, you've been lost.
Yeah.
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 Long lost.
My long lost. Long lost.
So what's your message to everybody here at Red Pill, and how do you, what would you say to the people out there, you know, who are trying to do this label lynching?
Don't be a hater. Let's all hold hands and sing songs and show love. You know, it's tribalism, Matt. It really is. My husband and I have had some very in-depth conversations about this over the last week or so, this instinctive tribalistic nature that we have. I've got this article brewing in my mind because we have gravitated so far from truth in America. Yeah. And so far from a desire for truth. You know, we just want red meat. We just want headlines. We want 140 characters or less. We don't want truth, right? So I saw this, and it just turned my skin. This headline, quote, "The Trump Family Separation Policy." Okay, so I'm not a Trump sick fan. I'm not a, you know, a Trump supporter, Trump hater. I am pretty much a political agnostic. I don't, I no offense, Matt, not a real fan of politicians. You're the exception, right? Because you're not a politician.
He's a statesman.
It's because I ate ice cream.
Yeah,
I'm soft, so I'm a real
He's not a politician.
Softer.
He's a statesman. We need more statesmen.
Softer. So anyway, what turned my skin was not the fact that it was labeling Trump, but the fact that it was denying the true source of the problem.
Right.
How many Americans know that this policy of separating families was normalized by the Supreme Court in 1993 in their opinion, Reno v. Flores? Under Clinton and Janet Reno, yes.
Yep.
So in this Reno v. Flores case, the Supreme Court says that it's constitutional to determine that children do not have the right to due process if the government can decide a better fate for them.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Because they know better.
Because they know better.
Wow. The black robe philosopher kings.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so this has been policy for every executive agency since Clinton.
Right.
Every single president in the United States has seen this happen under their administration, to one degree or another, even Obama.
Right.
And yet we label this Trump. So what the problem is here is that because we've become so tribalistic, right, we can't hate something until we can blame it on somebody we don't like.
Right.
So it's been a policy now for 25 years. But we can't hate it until we have somebody we can blame it on. And in the meantime, we miss the big picture.
That's right.
The big picture is the problem is the Supreme Court. The problem is the unfettered authority that we culturally grant to the Supreme Court and the corrupt immorality of the justices that drive political opinions from the bench.
We got a minute left live. What would be your message to the young folks out there? And, JJ, you as well.
My message to the young folks?
Yeah.
Question everything you see. Be a thinker, not a follower.
In other words, read the Constitution, too.
Read the Constitution. I mean everything. Because so you can read the Constitution, but you still have cognitive dissonance, and it won't mean anything based on unless what's been fed into your brain. And don't just read the Constitution. Read what the man who wrote it said about it. Go to LibertyFirstUniversity.com and get proper education on the Constitution.
Yeah. Learn the truth and don't hate the truth, because that's the problem that we have. People don't know the truth, and then when they hear it, they turn hostile against it.
Because cognitive dissonance, it challenges their foundation.
Exactly.
You don't want to know that you've been lied to your whole life.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. I'll tell you, when I first found the truth, the day I took the red pill, I was so mad.
Yeah,
I'd been lied to.
Yes.
I was angry at law school because I figured out that everything that I learned in law school had nothing to do about the Constitution at all.
And you don't actually read the Constitution in law school either as an assignment, which blows people away. Well, this is Matt Shea live on Patriot Radio with Chris Ann Hall and John Jacob Schmidt of Radio Free Readout. Hey, thank you both. Thank you, long
lost
friend.
Long lost friend. Liberty first, guys.
All right. Blessings, everybody out there.